KALW.
And definitely in terms of like the situation where you could just go to the park and play, that seems harder to find.
Today, we learn why a game that unites people from around the Bay Area is becoming harder to organize.
We bring the energy. This is a great, you know, location, great brotherhood over here. If you love soccer, you're here every Thursday.
Keeping pickup soccer games going. Then teenagers share their perspectives on gender identity.
I discover people through the internet, and it kind of like opened doors to like, oh, well, I've always felt like not completely like a girl, but I never knew how to put it into words because I've always told I was a girl.
It's an award-winning story from our podcast, TBH. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today we start the show with a story on what's known worldwide as the beautiful game, soccer, or what's known also as football. It's a story from our series, Culture Keepers.
I was very much fascinated by bells and lights and whistles.
It's my role to learn it well and protect it and keep it.
Alors, je vais faire l'explication en anglais. Soyez tolérants.
Just the energy and the drive that they have, like the future is looking f***ing golden.
A fundamental part of a thriving soccer scene is the culture of pickup soccer. But joining a free drop-in game may not be as easy anymore, with field access increasingly becoming for-profit with pay-to-play models. KLW's Pat McMahon drops in on a weekly soccer pickup in Oakland's San Antonio Park to meet the people who keep it going.
Every Thursday morning, a group of friends meets to play soccer at this park in East Oakland. Max Ornstill started organizing the game in early 2023, and today he greets the first player to arrive, a 13-year-old named Yaz.
You don't have school today? No?
They canceled it.
While he inflates balls with an electric pump, another organizer, Dylan Utron, says the start time isn't exact.
It's usually a trickle-in. You say 9 o'clock, but it never starts at 9 o'clock. It's always like 9:30. False 9. False 9, yep. Just like the position.
No foul.
Yep.
Wide!
Yep.
By 9:30, the action starts. The sun has cleared the oak trees at the top of the park, and the narrow turf field is drenched in light. Max takes it all in.
It has a gorgeous view of Oakland and the city skyline. I mean, this is a neighborhood field.
The games move quickly, with subs rotating in and out. I catch up with players like Mike Garrick on the sideline.
First of two, switch sides, and then we have rotating keeper. I would say all the keepers are probably pretty trash, including myself.
Yes, sir. Next up, Arla Johnson, who grew up playing pickup games in San Francisco almost every day. He says the difference between the pickup scene then and now is night and day.
And definitely in terms of like the situation where you could just go to the park and play. That seems harder to find. But yeah, I'm telling you, this pickup right here, this low-key, like, it's just been like super positive impact since I got back in the area. Yeah, like therapy.
That's a ball!
Max and Dylan have been playing soccer together since they were kids.
As long as time goes back. Since we were 8 or 9.
The two have been best friends ever since, each eventually playing professionally with the Oakland Roots. But they love pickup culture and wanted a casual game with high-quality players. So they called themselves Neighborhood Sports Club and networked on Instagram.
Watch out. I got your left.
Watch out.
Are you blind?
The game pulls in players from throughout the Bay Area, across different cultural communities. Alborz Mirzai was born in Berkeley, but his family is originally from Iran.
I've definitely gotten better since I've came here, for sure. My cousin used to come and play here. School started, so he can't come no more, but he brought me a couple times. I was like, oh, this is my new Thursday morning. Yeah, I even come on the weeks they don't come. I don't have an Instagram, and there was, I guess, one day where it was bad air quality. I think fires in Oregon. And yeah, I didn't get the memo. I came here and I was by myself.
In addition to Thursday mornings, he frequently plays in a Sunday game in Walnut Creek.
It's like church. Sunday morning, it used to be at 8, but now it's at 7 a.m. We call it the old Persians pickup, where you have like 5 to 8 30-plus-year-old Persians, and then the rest are young heads like us. It's super fun.
On the sideline, Ogbe Ioha tightens the laces on his cleats. Ogbe is originally from Benin, Nigeria, and has lived in the Bay Area since 2014. He drove in this morning from Richmond.
This is the place to come get some good workout after our hard days of work. This is the stressor. This is it, man. Come to Oakland. We're here in San Antonio Park. Every Thursday, 9 o'clock, sharp.
What time do you get here?
Family life, I get here late sometimes. Usually like 9:40, 10 o'clock is my time. But if I can get an hour, man, I'm happy.
He plays on the weekends with other African players. He needs his teammate to remind him where.
Priest, what's our field name, 18? Raimondi. Raimondi Park. So Bay Area African Football Club. Been around for almost 2 decades now.
Ogbe says he likes playing with people from his culture, but is also drawn to this diverse team. And it allows him to keep developing his skills.
As a football player, you got to stay consistent. You know, if not, you're going to lose it. You're going to lose it, and you got to play until the wheels fall off, man. Because once you stop, that's it. So play as long as you can and enjoy it. You know, this is a great organization that, you know, they're putting together, you know. And it's at its infancy, and I already see the growth already. It's good ballers coming here through, man. We bring the energy. This is a great, you know, location, great brotherhood over here. If you love soccer, you're here every Thursday.
Hey, split!
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
God.
Goal.
Easy, keep.
Keep, play. Thank you.
In just a year, this pickup game has developed a rotating cast of about 30 players. And organizer Max Ornstil is proud of that.
The fact that we have people from all over the world come in here, and they each bring their culture with them and what, you know, is special about where they're from or where they grew up. It just creates such a fun atmosphere and environment. We're just a blend of so many cultures all playing together. It's very sweet.
As the game ends, some players scramble off to start their days. Those who have more time meet for coffees at a nearby cafe, not wanting this weekly ritual to end. Only 7 more days until they get to do it again.
Yes, sir. Mike, come back now.
Bye.
In Oakland, I'm Pat McMahon for Cross Currents.
Pat is a current KALW Audio Academy Fellow. You can find more of his work and the rest of the stories from our series, Culture Keepers, at kalw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Henat Baba. Next, we're re-airing a story that won an award this year for Best Student Project from the Northern California chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists. It's from the original KALW production TBH, our podcast by, about, and for teenagers. Here's the host of Season 3, Cassidy Canner Gomes.
In this episode, we talk about identity. Specifically gender identity and what that means. What is gender anyway? My friends and I spent a lot of time under lockdown contemplating this. One of my friends said that they always felt like a child, not a boy or a girl, It wasn't until recently that they realized that there's a label for not feeling like they're one gender or the other in a binary system. My friends Mike, Declan, and Bronwyn had very different definitions of gender.
Society has decided that once you come out of the oven, they're gonna stamp you with the cookie cutter, and if you don't fit, then you're categorized as different. And that's what gender is to me. It's the fitting in the cookie cutter after you've come out of the oven.
I think the base definition for everyone is that it's a spectrum, but I think for me, more than a spectrum, I think the best way to describe it would be sort of like a liquid.
For me, gender means how I feel in the moment and how I view my body and how I view other people around me. For me, non-binary is a gender, and it means I don't really conform to male or female. It's a gray area, and it feels good.
I have my own definition of gender apart from those of my friends, but it's taken a while to figure out what it is. Months of time in lockdown, lots of talking, and lots of scrolling have contributed to it. Here's the story of how my thoughts on gender have evolved along with me and my friends.
No, I know, but I don't want him taking my water bottle again, so put it away.
Before the pandemic lockdown started a couple years ago, I was partway through my freshman year of high school at Oakland School for the Arts. I was just like any other 15-year-old, taking every possible opportunity to cause chaos with my friends at lunch. But I was still recovering from the awkwardness of middle school, and I was having a hard time just being myself. I wasn't yet comfortable speaking up or expressing my opinions on almost anything.
Oakland Unified School District officials made the announcement to close all schools for 3 weeks amidst the rising number of coronavirus cases.
We all know that this decision will pose difficult times for the families and students who depend on our schools.
Then the pandemic happened. Stuck at home and alone in my room, I didn't have the pressures of school and my social life to mask those uncomfortable thoughts and feelings. Everything slowed down. The pandemic gave me room to step back and reconsider who I really was. And like many other people today, especially my peers, I did a lot of that exploring through social media, especially TikTok.
Slay!
Maybe you might remember that several months ago I posted.
This is just a regular little gummy bear.
I first downloaded it in 2020 to learn more about Black history and protest tactics.
As a result of the anti-racism movement being fundamentally dependent on benevolent white people to use their privilege to educate ignorant white folk about racism.
On TikTok, I found groups of people talking about gender and gender confusion.
Hi, I'm Ash, and I'm throwing a gender tea party where we try on different pronouns and honorifics to see how they feel.
Videos similar to Ash's made me realize for the first time in my life that I could define myself whichever way I wanted. That included using whatever pronouns I preferred. This was a revelation. I hadn't even realized before that this was something that even mattered to me. I remember one particular TikTok. A young person talking about how they didn't feel disconnected from being a woman, it just felt like there was more there. I realized this was exactly how I felt. They said they felt happy when someone referred to them with they-them pronouns and asked their followers if they could use both she and they pronouns interchangeably. The welcoming response from the commenters was a turning point for me. It reassured me that I didn't need to be stuck just using she/her. Shortly after, one of my friends accidentally referred to me as they, and I realized that it made me happy. They just felt right. Soon, I found out I wasn't the only one of my friends who was thinking about this. My friend Bronwyn McCassin says sitting at home gave them a lot of time to think and reflect on gender too. Bronwyn was homeschooled before the pandemic lockdown, so they didn't have a lot of exposure to a wide variety of people. They didn't know anyone who identified as non-binary.
I discovered people through the internet, and it kind of like opened doors to like, oh, well, I've always felt like not completely like a girl, but I never knew how to put it into words because I've always told I was a girl.
It felt like a relief to know that I wasn't alone. But sometimes the journey of trying to label yourself can get really complicated. My friend, high school senior Daisha Williams, says they've identified with a bunch of different labels such as non-binary, transmasculine, and omnisexual. But that can be a mouthful, and a lot of people don't understand the complicated terminology, especially those who are not on the internet much, since that is the primary way that people find out about the more specific labels.
I think it makes it easier for
members of the community to find like a specific label that fits them. But I feel like also we put a lot of pressure on that, like the labeling of themselves.
It was really exciting to find all these specific labels, but after a while, it just got a bit overwhelming. Not just for me, but many of my friends too. Many of us still use them to help us sort out our feelings, but we don't usually use them for the outside world. My friends and I spend a lot of time on YouTube. It's where I found much more in-depth discussions on topics such as gender and sexuality, and learned more about feminist and queer theory. I absolutely love reading, but YouTube has been the place where I can see other people's thoughts on different theories. And it's often much more engaging and interactive.
I think when we have these rigid ideas of gender and we don't acknowledge that it is a cage that most of us are just put into.
Videos like these have helped me solidify my ideas on gender and have shown me new perspectives. Gender stereotypes are ingrained in us from the beginning, like long hair and makeup are for girls, short hair and sports are for boys. I've always found it difficult to fully break free from the centuries-old roles our culture assigns us. Even some of my wardrobe is based on the queer aesthetics I see on the internet. To embrace my gender identity outside of the binary, I've started to wear clothing styles deemed queer by my peers, such as baggy pants, bright colors, and flannels. I also started experimenting with my hair and makeup as a way to signal queerness to others. In a recent video entitled "What is Gender?", one of my favorite YouTube hosts, Abigail Thorne, says the internet has become its own culture.
In fact, as new social systems are created online, it's perhaps not surprising that we see some gender identities emerging that under different systems would be interpreted differently or actively sidelined.
The internet is a virtual space that connects like-minded people in the outside world. And University of Arizona professor Dr. Russ Toomey is an expert in family studies and human development. They study queer youth like my friends and I and how we connect with each other online. Toomey, along with colleagues, surveyed hundreds of trans and non-binary young people on their pandemic experience. They found that the revelations my peers and I had were pretty common.
Because of time, just like that essence of time and time spent alone during isolation, during quarantine, during stay-at-home orders, for people to have to reflect on who they are.
Toomey says perhaps the pandemic simply accelerated explorations into identity that were already happening.
Many young people talked about being able to do this in a more safe way when they weren't with their peers at school. Their cisgender, heterosexual peers that may be more likely to engage in bias or victimization or things like that.
That was certainly true for myself and my friends. My friend and fellow classmate Daisha, who we heard from earlier, says watching others on the internet sparked conversations with their own family. It spurred them to Zoom with a cousin who was going through something similar.
And talked about like family and gender. How our family isn't like the greatest when it comes to that. Talking to him kind of helped me like figure that out. Because before that, I never really like knew an older person that was cis, especially like one in my family, especially one that was Black. So it was, whoa, I can do this. That's crazy.
For my friends and I, the pandemic cracked open our sense of selves, and rethinking gender was a big part of that. Language plays a big role in how we think about gender. Changes to the structures of language and how we use it, like using a wider array of pronouns, greatly change how we think about ourselves. Changing our assumptions about gender can also threaten existing power structures. And not everyone is comfortable with that. Parts of our society are organized around traditional gendered relationships and the power imbalances they hold. Restrictions around language are a way that some people are pushing back to protect the binary and a power structure that serves their interests. Many states are passing laws trying to restrict any examination or acknowledgement of multiple gender identities, part of a national and even global movement to force the gender genie back into the bottle. But for me and my friends, there's no going back. We've built and found communities online and in real life, and connected with people all over the place. In many parts of the country, queer people don't enjoy the same feeling of belonging that some of my friends and I do. And even in the progressive Bay Area, many of my non-white queer friends still feel invisible, especially in some of these online spaces, which way overrepresent voices and images of white people. There are many people out there fighting for visibility and representation, but the queer community as a whole has a long way to go. To me, gender is a construct, but it's a very important construct. It impacts how we live our lives and interact with the world. I've been increasingly thinking of it as fluid instead of fixed, and we can make it what we want it to be. Labels can help us find our niche, and that's important, but labels aren't all we are, and every one of us is unique. I think we should all push to get rid of rigid gender expectations altogether. Why do we need to box ourselves in? That said, we need words to describe how we see ourselves, and gender labels help us find some sense of belonging and community. That's important for mental health. I feel lucky to live in a place where many of the people I know, both online and in person, share similar experiences. There are many things that change and help you grow as a person between the ages of 15 and 17. But figuring out my gender was like finding a major missing piece of my identity puzzle. Because I live with my parents, they got to see from up close how I shifted the way I think about my gender during the pandemic. Here's my mom.
There's a kind of bold expressiveness that I see in you that I think is very much connected to your sense of who you are as a gendered or ungendered being.
The joy my friends and I have felt from being able to express ourselves in a free and unconstrained way is powerful. Often, when we talk about queerness, the conversation revolves around the suffering and oppression we face regarding our identities. I think we need to create more spaces for people to be able to fully feel and express the joy of being queer. If there's one thing that I want you, the listener, to take away from this episode, is to go out there and do what makes you feel comfortable in your identity. Even if it feels unconventional or you're doing something that other people tell you not to, go find ways to express yourself that bring you joy and make you want to go on happy rants about your gender. It may take some time to figure it out, but I promise it's worth it.
That award-winning episode of TBH first aired in 2022. You can find the rest of the series at klw.org/TBH. Tune in tomorrow morning at 11. Oakland skaters talk about what it takes to build your own skate park.
Yeah, it's concrete. It's a lot of dirt and then and rocks and love and sweat and blood, maybe a couple of cigarettes. And then concrete on top of that.
Try not to get too hurt or keep going if you do get hurt. Yeah, or know when to go home and get too hurt.
And that's life. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Try not to get too hurt, but you keep going if you do get hurt.
A new story from our series Culture Keepers, tomorrow morning at 11. Before we say goodbye, here's some music from a local artist.
Explain it though I know we've tried.
This is San Francisco's May Powell. She'll be performing in her city this Saturday at the Rickshaw Stop. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sandra Halliday, Alistair Boone, Devin Strolovich, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
To itself.